the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So it's kind of hard to beat the ceremony. I think the ceremony in itself would have been enough today, but I'll try to give a bit of a talk here. And what I'd like to talk to today about is kind of a big topic. I'm going to call it knowing and not knowing, certainty and uncertainty, getting things squared away and living with loose ends, accomplishing things and just doing the best you can. I think we know about all those. In a way, I think this ties in with the festival of Memorial Day today. Okay. So as you probably all know, the word Buddha means the awakened one. That's kind of the direct translation. The awakened one, the one who knows, the one who is really plugged into awareness of the here and now. But also, the Buddha was a human being. Okay? I don't think that he knew everything, just like instantly knew everything. He's a human being. I do believe, though, that at a given moment in time, because of his great awareness, awakenedness, and his stillness, he could often zero in into clearly seeing things as they are. He had that ability. He could just get things out of the way and just look at what was right in front of him. If you go through the Buddhist scriptures, the Buddha didn't always give an answer. He got asked questions. Sometimes he just didn't say anything. Okay? He had inquiries. Sometimes he would reply. There's all kinds of sutras in which he's answering questions that people brought to them, inquiries, but sometimes he just remained silent. And I kind of wonder if sometimes he said, "I don't know," when someone asked him something. I think probably he did. Or he might have said, "That's uncertain." He could just leave it there. It's uncertain. Okay. I want to read a little teaching from the Buddha here that, again, I think many of you are familiar with. It's called A Handful of Leaves. There's actually other versions of it. There's A Handful of Sand. And they all these things get at the same point. And this is actually in the Connected Discourses of the Buddha, the Samyutta Nikaya, in the section entitled Discourses on the Truth. There's actually a whole section of that that's devoted to teachings on the Four Noble Truths. So on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi in the Simsapa Grove. Then the Blessed One took up a few Simsapa leaves in his hand and addressed the monks thus, "What do you think, monks, which is more numerous, these few leaves that I have taken up in my hand or those in the grove overhead? Venerable sir, the leaves that the Blessed One has taken up in his hands are few, but those in the grove overhead are numerous. So too, monks, the things I have directly known but have not yet taught you are numerous, while the things I have taught you are few. And why, monks, have I not taught those many things? Because they are without benefit, irrelevant to the fundamentals of the spiritual life, and do not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. Therefore, I have not taught them. And what, monks, have I taught? I have taught this is suffering. I have taught this is the origin of suffering. I have taught this is the cessation of suffering. I have taught this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. And why, monks, have I taught this? Because this is beneficial, relevant to the fundamentals of the spiritual life, and leads to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. Therefore, I have taught this. Therefore, monks, an exertion should be made to understand this is suffering. An exertion should be made to understand that this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So, and I think it's just really important with that, and the way that the Buddha taught, he never just taught about suffering. If he talked about suffering, he also talked about there is a cessation of suffering. And that in fact, every one of us can find that place of cessation. Okay. So the Buddha chose to teach what was beneficial and what leads to nirvana, liberation. Okay. In our present world, there's so much information out there, very quickly accessible. Never in any point in time has there been so much stuff, you know, that you can access. I think this has its benefits. The other day, we had a car problem in town, and this kind gentleman, who I think was an aspiring mechanic and knew a lot about cars, he offered just to fix our car. And before you know it, he was on his little iPod, or whatever you call it, and he was watching must be a YouTube. I'm sure my terminology isn't right here with many of these things, but anyway, a YouTube video on how you could repair this particular thing. It was about the tumbler in the, where you turned the key. You know, it was amazing. It's like, okay, and you know, it was really kind of him. No, we couldn't get it fixed. No, this is a whole other story about our cars today. You can't hotwire cars like you used to. You have to be able to turn the key to get the part out so you can replace the part. So, it was really kind of him. Okay. So all this information obviously has some great uses. Okay. It's undeniable. Now, on the other hand, I think we have all experienced overload on all the choices we have. You know, you used to go into the grocery store and you just wanted to get a bag of potato chips, and now it's, you know, 20 bags. Well, I mean, the internet, you can find yourself an hour and a half later. You're just looking for a pair of shoes, but you want to get the best deal, and you kind of go from this one to that one, and, you know. And, you know, it can be like that with just general information. So it can cause overload. Also, I think we have to be careful not to mistake information for knowledge. Information is just information. Maybe it's correct, maybe it's not correct. Maybe it's someone's opinion, maybe it's been proven. You have to be careful. And nowadays, anyone can write anything about anyone or anything, anytime. I mean, it's at the tip of your fingers. So what is good and true takes some discernment. I mean, that's always been the case, but maybe even more so now. Okay. When I was a novice monk, so I'm talking 39 years ago or something, I went with our master Hario to, he was going to do a class at Southern Oregon College. I think it's called Southern Oregon University now. So he's doing this class. I think it was a world religions class, but obviously, you know, he'd come to talk about Buddhism, and he did. And then there were some questions, and someone asked him a question, and he said, "I don't know." And I thought, that's enlightening for someone just to say, "I don't know." And it's actually, for me, it was a great relief to realize I didn't have to have all the answers. And if I didn't know, I'd just say I don't know. Okay? Okay. Sometimes these days I can't remember who told me what. Or worse yet, sometimes I can't remember the content of what I told somebody, or what they told me. And then additionally, sometimes somebody attributes something to me that I don't remember saying. I mean, it's kind of worrying, okay? Also kind of in this line, I went to the Bay Area to visit my brother who's going to have an operation on his back soon, come back to the Abbey, and somebody tells me a piece of information, and my reaction is, well, nobody asked me, okay? And then it kind of came up again, and I found myself saying, nobody asked me. And then I realized, this is really suffering. You know, to reply in this way is really suffering. What does it matter? It doesn't matter. Nobody asked me. Okay. You know, get over it. It's nobody asks us in life often. And we get handed all kinds of stuff or stuff happens. And yeah, sure, it's nice when people ask you, but sometimes it's just not the way it goes and people need to move quickly. Okay. Well, anyway, I don't think I'm going senile yet. Okay, all these little flags, you know, about not remembering and the like. And I think one of the beauties of aging is that we've all experienced all kinds of things. You know, if you age, you have increasing experience of life. And the brain has a remarkable ability to remember. And it's limited. Okay? You can only hold so much. Okay, to show you again my knowledge of computers, you get these notices, at least I do, on my computer screen saying you have too much in your mailbox. I just delete it. It's probably bad. But, okay. The brain is kind of like that. We can only hold so much information. So you age, you have lots of, more and more experiences, things are happening around you. Yeah, you're only going to remember so much. Okay, to let more in, you have to let something out. It's kind of like simple, whatever that is, physics or whatever. You know, you can't hold it all. So maybe not holding on to everything, not having to remember everything, not being certain of everything, not knowing everything, maybe that's an okay thing. Okay? It's just what happens. As I say, the container is only so big. If you want more to come in, you have to let some go out. So I think sometimes we have a mistaken idea of what certainty or knowing is. We get kind of a cerebral fixation on what certainty and knowing is. But when you practice, spiritual practice, you look at yourself, you begin to question your ideas of certainty and knowing. In the ninth chapter of the Diamond Sutra, okay, the Diamond Sutra is this conversation between the Buddha and Saputi, one of his disciples. But in the ninth chapter, the Buddha and Saputi are talking about the emptiness of the four fruits. Okay, and the four fruits in Buddhism, they're classifications of spiritual attainment. Okay. So you have the stream enterer, once returner, non-returner, arhant. Okay. It's okay, you don't have to hold this. If it goes through you, it's okay. So you read this ninth chapter, and the interesting thing is, though, that it's clear from their exchange that there's no such thing as entering, no such thing as returning, no such thing as never returning, and no such thing as attaining. So in other words, someone who has reach these spiritual landmarks, they're not concerned with them. They wouldn't say, I'm a stream enter, I'm an arhant. Okay? But this is the Mahayana version here of this. The Theravadan version, which I found very interesting, I don't know if Anjan Cha read the Diamond Sutra, or it's just a basic thing in Buddhism. Ajahn Chah was a very famous Thai forest master. Okay? But in his Dharma talk, which is entitled "Not Sure the Standards of the Standard of the Noble Ones," he says, "If the mind tries to tell you that you are a stream enterer now, and you were to bring this thought to the Buddha, he'd say it's all uncertain. If you were to decide you are a once returner, he'd simply say not a sure thing. If the thought, I am a non-returner, were to arise, the Buddha would tell you only one thing, uncertain. If it even comes to the point of thinking you are an arhant, he'd tell you even more firmly, it's all very uncertain." So, just more here, he continues, "These are the words of the noble ones. Everything is uncertain. Don't cling to anything. Don't just hold on to things foolishly. Don't cling to things, holding fast to them without letting go. Look at things as appearances and then send them on to transcendence. That's how you must be. There must be appearance and there must be transcendence." So the Buddhist teaching, if we'll allow ourselves to hear it, takes us beyond appearances to a bigger view. Appearances are important and not to be neglected. And we don't want to get stuck there. I'm sure you all have the experience of something not being the way you originally thought it was, or of just completely misunderstanding something. That's a very human experience, if we let ourselves realize that that's what's going on. So my mantra for quite a while has been, that's the way it is. That is the way it is. So this is after the fact. You know, I kind of think things are some way, and then I realize, well, actually, they're not that way. This is the way they are. So I'm always kind of, you know, which I don't think is a bad thing, catching up on the end of it, of realizing, I didn't get it quite right. I missed something. You know, there's more going on. I didn't hear or see it quite correctly. Master Jiyu had this saying, I could be wrong. Okay? And later, I could be right. And then still later, simultaneously, I could be wrong, I could be right. Okay? Together. Because they can exist together. Towards the end of her life, she repeated a saying of Great Master Dogen. She would say, all that I know is that on a face there are two eyes and a nose. I mean, you know, there's this, I think, great Zen master. That's what they're saying, you know? I don't think Reverend Master Jiyu didn't know anything or didn't have a sense of spiritual certainty. I mean, if you met her, you know, there was a real certainty there, but she carried her certainty with humility, compassion, and wisdom. To her, you know, what was the most important thing was keeping the important thing in mind. And she often said, it's enough for me to know the unborn. So kind of like the Buddha, you know, there's all these things, you know, but what's important? And I think when she would say, it's enough for me to know the unborn, that is the realization of suffering, suffering's cause, cessation of suffering, and the path to the cessation of suffering. And, you know, I feel that to look at things in this way takes a great load off your shoulders. We actually can't save the whole world. We will not know all the answers to everything. We can't solve everybody's problems. If we do something about our own state of being, we can help the world. We, in fact, change the world for the better. Okay? And in Buddhism, we always connect and couple up compassion and wisdom together. So You know, you can't just have compassion. There has to be some discernment there. There has to be wisdom. And if your wisdom, you know, this gets too prominent, it can turn hard because it knows. So there's always compassion to balance it. And I think these two things together really help beings. And if you have them, don't have them together, there's something missing. So, you know, the big picture of life has layers upon layers of complexity. I don't know, in some ways it gets simpler, but some ways it gets more complex too. You know, we don't have all the answers. We're not certain of everything. We don't know everything. So I think it's okay to say I don't know and to realize that many things are uncertain. Sometimes, you know, answers come quickly. Sometimes they take time and they take patience. And you say in Buddhism, patience is the greatest austerity. And patience, as opposed to an emotional response, I think gives a clearer picture of what is actually going on. Okay? You know, accomplishments, they're great. You know, I'm all for getting things done. And, you know, sometimes you can push so much with an accomplishment and to try to accomplish something that there's a price you pay for that, for yourself and others. So you have to wonder, are accomplishments always the important thing? Maybe this is a mark of getting older, but I'm seeing that it's better to slow down, okay? Not achieve so much, and be more present where you are now. And still you have to get things done, but it's this balance, you know, of just taking care in how you do things. Because I was not born into Buddhism, I was not steeped in Buddhism from a young age, you know, I found it was a bit of a learning curve for me, and I've had to educate myself about the Buddhist teachings. I don't seem to retain a lot, but you know, at least I'm trying to put stuff in, and you know, some of it sticks. And I know for all I've read about something, I still don't grasp it. Well, maybe it's not meant to be grasped. Maybe that's the real thing, you know. Things like karma. I must say, you know, when I come to try to explain it, I can't explain it. It's said only a Buddha can really explain, you know, what it is. But I don't think a Buddha would be concerned in that sense of being a Buddha. They just explain it. So, you know, this idea of grasping at things and fixing them, of tying up all the everythings. Now, this is an example. My room, you know, I try to clean it up, but then the piles start again. And then I clean it up, and the piles start again. It doesn't work for me to, you know, kind of, I'm not going to have any piles anymore. It's just what happens. So I'll have piles, and I'll be cleaning them up probably for the rest of my life. Hopefully I don't leave too many piles around for other people. But if I do, maybe there's something in them for somebody. I don't know. Maybe so. Okay. So recently I found that I have to put an equal amount of time, well, actually equal amount of time or more, looking into my own heart. So this, you know, idea of looking outwards at books and ideas, and it's okay, but I kind of ask myself, what do I know about, you know, do I really understand this, you know, at a heart level? Am I really looking at it from there? Is it just more stuff? Okay. And, you know, you can be a hungry ghost for Buddhist scriptures as much as anything else. Hungry ghost meaning, you know, you're grasping. Okay. And I've come to the conclusion for now that it's okay to be uncertain. It's okay not to know. Okay, I won't use them as excuses. I take full responsibility. But I'm not going to tie everything up. I'm not going to be the great certain one. The important thing for me, as I'm sure it is for all of you, is to know that which is unconditioned, that which is unborn, okay? Which is the real certainty. And everyone has access to that. And I think that we tap into those things by really looking at what causes suffering, why we're doing it, and how we cannot do it again. We don't necessarily have to know all the details, okay? But if something is causing suffering, just look it square in the face, take responsibility for it, and begin to change it with patience, compassion, and wisdom. And I couldn't resist this. It's a very ending. My calendar, I got one of those little spiritual sayings calendar that somebody gives me every year. So the saying for this weekend is, the first sign of your becoming religious is that you are becoming cheerful. That's a clue. It's a real clue. This training, okay, your spiritual life should not bog you down. It should open you up. Okay? And when you open up, you have to open up into uncertainty, because that's the way it is.